They were just better than us in pretty much every area, you know. The way they pitch, the timely hitting, they got big hits, they make big-time plays defensively. They just pretty much outplayed us the whole series.
You just try and forget about it?
Yeah. There's nothing else you could do, you know. Three games, now we got to kind of go home, you know, have had a good day off tomorrow, and we got to be ready to play against the A's on Tuesday in front of our fans. So, like I said, flush this one out. Still got a lot of meaningful games, you know, ahead of us, and we'll be ready to go.
Describe it as a relief to begin the next nine games at home.
A relief?
A relief, or how would you describe it?
I mean, we love playing at home. So we're happy we're going home. We're going to see our families, and playing in front of our home fans, it's gonna be great. Yeah, it's gonna be great. I think we have a good opportunity. We just gotta maximize it. You know, we gotta continue to continue to push each other and stay disciplined in what we've been doing. You know, everybody's been putting in the work. We just didn't have the results we wanted this series. You know, so learn from it. And the results are going to come if we continue, if we stay true to ourselves.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, August the 12th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Come to you this late Monday morning, a chance for you guys to marinate on the just completed 10-game road trip, four cities. Probably the worst weekend of Mets baseball we've seen in I don't know how long. I mean, I think they almost were shut out in three straight games, and I think the last time they did that was 1992, worst team money can buy. And I had a bad feeling about the Seattle series from the start. I really did, and I talked about that. But in the end, and we'll talk about that in this edition of the Talking Mets podcast, it's not a disastrous road trip. It's not a good road trip. But the Mets are at an inflection point with a critically important homestand, which they get lucky. They have a couple of second division clubs, which at this time of the year doesn't mean anything. Everybody could be a threat, especially with guys competing for jobs. We're going to talk about the Mets offense because I think that that's a big topic of conversation that we need to get into. And then really look at the schedule and what's coming up. And really honestly assess the wild card. So a lot to get into here. We're not just going to sit here and whine about the Seattle weekend, the lost Seattle weekend, the very difficult watching ESPN Sunday Night Baseball yesterday. I know it was windy out in Seattle. Between all the smoke they kept blowing every time there was a home run, I thought Seattle was an environmentally friendly state. Wasn't that, or city? I shouldn't say state, city. Isn't that what they were supposed to be? Well, that smoke blowing didn't seem very environmentally friendly. And then the camera's shaking, and I don't know, the ESPN was just bothering me last night. I'll be honest, I checked out at 5 or 6-1. I knew the Mets weren't going to come back after that. I said, that's it. I'm done. On to the next. And I almost was going to do the show at the end of the game, but then I said, you never know. You never know what comes out of it. You don't want to do this thing too early. So I wrote about this over at Beyond the Mic, and I'll repeat it. I've said it many times. I wrote about it for the paid subscribers out there Beyond the Mic. You have to look at a pennant race just like a basketball game. And I've said it over and over and over and over again. And I'll say it again because I think it's worth remembering. Everybody's going to be down after being outscored 20-1 over a weekend. Everybody's going to be melancholy about the Mets' position. A lost opportunity this road trip. Blew a game in Anaheim. Couldn't even get a win in Seattle. They could have easily came back 6-4. And we're having a completely different conversation, much closer to the top of the wild card. A little bit of room between them and Atlanta. But instead, they're out of the wild card by a half game. And right now, they have a bunch of teams starting to nip at their toes a little bit. Not just St. Louis, but San Francisco, Chicago, even Cincinnati. I wouldn't put them out of it. But this really, this season exemplifies what a basketball game is all about, especially in the modern NBA. And I'm going to repeat it. You get the game going. Sometimes you fall behind like the Mets did early in the year. You fall behind by 15, maybe even 20 points. But inevitably, you make your run. And you put a lot of time and effort and energy into getting back in the game. And maybe by halftime, early third quarter, you tie the game or even go ahead. But all that energy and effort will be matched by the opposition, who usually then goes out and makes another run. And maybe you go from being down 20 to up a couple of points, and then you're down 7 or 8 points, and now you're saying, all right, now I got to get back. All that work, whatever. But ultimately, the game gets decided in the last 2 minutes, because typically in competitive NBA landscape, especially with evenly matched teams, that's what happens. And this is no different with the wild card race. I keep telling everybody, don't get too high, don't get too low. It'd be great if the Mets went on a run like San Diego and Arizona and won 14 out of 17 to maybe put themselves in a little bit more advantageous situation. But I think we all knew, because of the hole they put themselves in, and they were probably playing a bit over their heads, and maybe offensively, we'll get into that, over the course of a couple of months. I don't think this roster is a roster that's the best roster in baseball. They were playing like one of the best teams in baseball. I think they're a good roster. I think they're a good team. I think they're well managed. I think the front office has done a good job with what they've had in front of them. But I don't think I'm ready to say they're at the top of the sport like they've been for a while. They were just having a correction because they were so under-indexed after their horrible May. And it's really been a theme all season that they have gone from one extreme to the other. There's been no balance this year in terms of consistent play. Ultimately, we thought they were somewhere in the 85 win range from all the way back in the winter. And right now, they're about an 84-85 win team, which puts them in that muck of that last wild card. Doesn't put them at the top. And I kept telling everybody who were talking about, well, the wild card's not competitive, teams under 500 are in the second or first wild card. That never is how this thing plays out. You have enough data in history going back at least 15 years to know that 85 wins will get you into a third wild card. But if you want to be at the top of the wild card race, 88 to 90, usually 90, is necessary to guarantee that you'll be at the top of the wild card heap. This is going back a while. Are there outliers? I'm sure if I went all the way back and did an extensive research going all the way back into the modern era, you know, expansion era of baseball, maybe I could find some. I know that everybody talks about the 94 strike season when the AL West was possibly going to be decided by an under 500 club. But these are extreme outliers here. So here we are, and it's very likely, and this is the crazy part about it, who would have thought going back to the beginning of the year when the Braves were picked to dominate the NL East, and then when the Phillies made their early season run, it was supposed to be a Phillies-Braves race, and then Acuna goes down and Strider goes down, and quite honestly, the Braves, even before Acuna went down, were not playing great baseball. There seems to be something missing with that club. Even though they have really good starting pitching, they have a really good bullpen, the offense, which was this offense that we all thought was going to be historically good, not so great, has been pretty bad. And they're still dangerous, and there's still some guys like Riley and Olsen, and if they get Albies back, you got to watch out for them. They got Michael Harris back. These are guys that have a resume, that have played in big games, have come up big, and even though they're not competing for a division like they were a couple of years ago, it's almost like we're back to Mets Braves again, which I know makes everybody uncomfortable, especially with the Mets going into Atlanta in September, which very well could be what is going to be the difference in this wild card race. So you can't get too high and too low. This was not a good road trip. It's not a disastrous road trip by any stretch. They survive. They have another one coming up, which really that one, at the end of the month after they play Oakland and Miami, and then they have a tough series against the Orioles, and they go straight from Citi Field to San Diego without a day off. They get a day off in between San Diego and Arizona. But the San Diego, the seven games with San Diego and Arizona, if they are really going to get into the upper echelon, if they're still within a reasonable distance at that point of San Diego and Arizona, and those teams are hot and they're going to cool down just like in an NBA game. Nobody's going to shoot 65% the entire game. They're going to go through their runs. They're going to go through their runs. But those two series are the ones that potentially could even be even more decisive. But again, I really believe, as you look, and the Mets have about three road series left. They have the West Coast trip that ends in Chicago with the White Sox. Then they come home to play the Red Sox and the Reds. Then they go on another trip to Toronto and Philadelphia, come home for the Nats and the Phillies. And then they go on the road to end the season with Atlanta and Milwaukee. These are all going to be, every road trip for the rest of the year is going to be rough. And to get crazy, when the Mets are above 500 on the road for the year, having really, to a T, the same road record as the Phillies, the goal at the beginning of the year is, and you'd love to dominate, is to play about 500 on the road. Win, you know, about 45-ish games on the road, if you can. You know, 42, 43, and then play really well at home. And that's really where we're at right now. The Mets, all season, starting with the first homestand when they started out 0-5, have not really played well at home. It seems like they've always been, and we talk about this all the time, and I think they've been better, obviously, since early in the year, since that horrific May. But they're a team that has not performed well at home. We've talked about it over and over and over. Is it the fans? Is it the atmosphere? Is it the depressed offense? Is it teams getting up to play in New York? They now have a chance to start to play, because you can't expect them to play 600, 620 baseball on the road. You can't expect them to go on these road trips the rest of the year and win 7 out of 10. It's asking a lot of any team. Forget about the travel and all that other stuff. These are teams that you're playing in their home ballparks that are playing well. You know, San Diego, very similarly to the Mets, is actually not a great home team. Arizona's a better home team. The Braves have always been a tough home team. The Phillies are always, I mean, the Citizens Bank Park is always a tough place to play. So you've got to hold serve at home. And I will tell you this, it's going to be very telling over the next week. I'll put the Orioles series in a separate category. That's a tough team. That's a good barometer. And to tell you the truth, the Mets failed a really interesting test this weekend. They faced really good pitching on the road, albeit in a ballpark that is extremely, I think Citi Field's bad, extremely depressed environment in terms of offense with T-Mobile Park out in Seattle. But it will be interesting to see when they play the Orioles how they play against an upper echelon team. Now, I know they went out, they swept the Yankees, they played at Yankee Stadium. The Yankees were in a bit of a slump, and they caught them at the right time, and they were in transition, especially with the offense and everything like that. So the Mets have played well, and they've competed with the Phillies all year and the Braves all year. So I'm not saying they haven't. But now things are getting real, and the Orioles are one of the best teams in baseball. They've played well all year. They're coming into Citi Field. Let's see how the Mets play against them. But leading into that, it is so important, and I don't want to ever say you're going to sweep the table with Oakland and Miami. I know they're second division clubs, because you never know. Look, the A's play well and get a lead late with their closer. They're as tough as any team in baseball with Mason Miller, somebody we talked about on this show. So don't discount them. And Miami, even though they lost to San Diego this week and they won yesterday, I still don't understand that ground rule double home run with Kim. I'm not even going to get into that. I looked at the replay a couple of times. I don't get it. I'm not diving into it in a big way. But they could score some runs, it seems like. Their pitching has actually been the problem, which is kind of interesting. And when you play these teams late in the season, whether it's August or September, especially with players who have something to prove, who are fighting for jobs, who are fighting for respect in the league, well, anything goes. Brett Rooker gets up in a big spot late with a one- or two-run lead against the Mets bullpen. You're going to say the A's are the worst team in baseball, that they're no better chance to win than if the Braves were up with Matt Olson? Of course not. He's a great hitter. So next week is a critically important week. They stub their toe against these second division opponents going into the Orioles series, staring down the barrel of a big West Coast trip, the second one in a month. Then you got some problems, and we'll talk about that then, and we'll get into that then. But year to date, this team, ever since May, when they've stared into the abyss, so they've been challenged, they've been able to come up and make it happen. And I thought they were going to get a game this weekend in Seattle to make it a 500 road trip. It just didn't happen. I mean, the bats were against elite pitching, and that's where I'm going here. The bats were smothered. The Mets were smothered. It actually reminded me, if you go back, and I think it was either 2009 or 10, I think it was 2010, when the Phillies early in the year came to Citi Field, and the Mets swept them. You know, one of the rare times during, that was late in the Phillies, that golden era of Philadelphia baseball run with Utley and Rollins and Worth and those guys. It was one of the rare times the Mets were successful in a big-time way at Citi Field or anywhere against those guys. They usually play better against them at Citizens Bank Park, believe it or not, in Philadelphia. But they didn't score a run the whole series. They shut them out the whole series. Go look it up. And that was kind of how I felt watching the Mets play the Mariners this weekend. But I started to dive in and do a little back-of-the-paper bag math with the Mets offense. And for the year, they're one of the better offensive teams out there, averaging about 4.7, 4.8 runs per game. They're in the top of the league right now, in the National League. They're above league average. They're towards the bottom of the top offensive teams, but they're right there with the Phillies and the Padres and the Brewers. I mean, actually, the Diamondbacks are one of the best offensive teams in the sport. We saw that when they came to Citi Field. The Dodgers, there's not much difference. And how, I mean, you're talking about the difference between the Mets and the Dodgers is, you know, I mean, 20 runs is a lot, but when you spread it out, it's a run here, a run there. I mean, it's not a tremendous difference in terms of scoring. But since the All-Star break, the Mets are averaging 4.3 runs per game. And if you want to take this a step further, since August 1st, they're averaging 3.77. That's bad. 3.77 puts them only ahead of the Marlins on that average for the season. And you want to get even further into that, you take away the offensive outburst against Minnesota at home with the 15 runs and the 12 runs at Yankee Stadium in the blowout to sweep the Yankees. And they're averaging 3.4, which puts them dead last in the league, which puts them in a really bad spot. And that's where you're really at. And right now, this team, I don't care if they're playing Oakland, Miami, Arizona, Anaheim, Seattle. I don't care who they're playing. By the way, these numbers were before they scored one run yesterday against the Mariners. That kind of offense is not going to allow them to be successful. Remember, the variability in the offense, an offense that scored only four runs a game back in May when they struggled, has been where the up and the down is. Because the starting pitching has pretty much been what you thought it would be. 5-6 innings, 2-3 runs, no length. Usually doesn't really give you good performance third time around the order. Occasionally it does. We've seen some guys perform better at times, like Severino, Manaea, Quintana, and then the next time they don't. But they're doing just enough.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To do their part. The bullpen has been really good early, really bad in the middle, and you're trying to figure it out now with all the changes you made. You seem to have a circle of trust, if you want to call it that, that's developing with Maton, with Nunez coming back. You have Diaz in that scenario. You know, maybe Reed Garrett comes back into that. It's tricky because you don't know exactly how that's going to play out. I'm not so sure about Stanek right now in that whole situation. They really need Nunez back. I think that's going to be key to that bullpen. And, you know, Jose Buto, of course, doing what he does. So you have that. You have what you feel like some predictability. Even though the bullpen isn't great, it's not the best bullpen in the league. I think when you get a lead late, you can figure it out. if you have the lead. But the offense has been this weird where at one minute they're some of the best, they're among the best in baseball. You feel that they could put 5, 6, 7 runs a game up, no problem. And then the next minute, they can't get runners in from third with less than 2 outs. They look sleepy all weekend, albeit again against a really good staff. And when you start to really look at it, even when they were scoring as you get into July, they were having big innings. Against Atlanta, they had a big inning. And then they grinded out a win to split that series. They didn't hit a lot in that series. Minnesota, they won a couple of games. They bullied them one game, but they won a 2-0 game the next night. They're not scoring at a level which says, hey, this is an elite offensive team. Now, very similarly to the 2022 Mets, because I see some similarities, with the exception of the starting pitching, that team's starters, their big three, DeGrom, Scherzer, Bassett, was much better. This offense is very similar where it's streaky. And you know, you hope that they can put up a crooked number. They get to 5 runs. They're usually pretty golden, especially if Diaz is being Diaz. And he's starting to point in that direction. Maybe he's not 100% Diaz, but I think he's 80 to 85% right now. I mean, I'll give him that. So when you look at this team, it's very similar to 2022. And then you're asking yourself, well, can this offense actually score enough to justify the drop-off in starting pitching that you've seen from a couple of years ago? And maybe give this bullpen, which is no lockdown bullpen, even Diaz to a certain degree, a little bit of a cushion. And that's where there's some questions. Because right now, Brandon Nimmo's been awful. And I'm questioning whether he's kind of lost his Midas touch, not being leadoff spot. Ideally, he'd be in the leadoff spot. I mean, his numbers at number 2 in the lineup are pretty good. Number 3, not so good. Does Lindor need to continue leading off to be elite and to be who he is? And the real question, and put Pete Alonso, who we've talked about a lot, who had an awful series in Seattle after a good series in Colorado. And to be truthful, Colorado, not vintage Colorado, 1998 Colorado, but you got to hit in Colorado. If you're not going to hit in Colorado, you're not going to hit anywhere in the league. Put him aside for a minute, but are we seeing the decline? And I always say with older players, late 30s, we talk about Tom Glavine, we talk about, you know, on the pitching side. But are we seeing the decline of J.D. Martinez right before our eyes? Because this was the concern. Had a back issue, got the shot in spring training, said himself he hoped that it lasted him all year. We saw a bad second half in Boston a couple of years ago. That was one of the reasons I cited why I was concerned about the Mets going after him and importing him as a big bat. I'm like, look at the numbers. He's got this bad back. He's got an OPS on the 700. So it's not the first time in the last few years he's had these stretches. But right now, he's hitting 227 with 3 homers and an OPS of 689, I believe, in the second half. You know, pretty much in the last couple of months. He's hitting under 700 with an OPS on the road. By the way, those 3 home runs, two of them are those grand slams that he hit. So, I mean, you take away the 2 grand salamis, and this is ugly. So, if J.D. Martinez is declining before our eyes and can't get himself back on track, you have yourself a major problem. And the guys that you're looking to ask to step up and plug gaps are really guys all season, like Iglesias. You're asking Jesse Winker. By the way, I told you when guys come over from a deadline deal, it doesn't automatically click right away. It takes them time to adjust. You're seeing that with Winker. You're asking Alvarez and Vientos to perform at a high level in uncharted waters with the additional responsibility of Alvarez with the catching and all that stuff. And, you know, now you're starting to see some questions about his defense behind the plate on blocking balls in the dirt. If you don't think that that's going to impact the staff, well, guess what? If you see the guy can't block balls in a big spot, all of a sudden now, these guys are going to change their repertoire. They may not want to bounce that pitch in the dirt. And that's a problem. And that's a problem. You cannot ask Bader, who's been everything on the offensive side you could ask for. Iglesias, who's been more than you could ask for on the offensive side. I mean, he has an OPS over 900 at one point. Taylor, Torrens. These are component players. What you get out of them rounds the lineup out. You can't expect them to carry. Now, McNeil has done his part. McNeil has done his part in a good way. But, you know, he's just one guy. So, and he took a ton of accountability, Nimmo. Ton of accountability. But at some point, Alonso, Nimmo, JD Martinez, Lindor have to do their part. Out of the four, Lindor has been the only consistent one. And he's the one that gets beat up the most. And right now, they have to give themselves, you know, the day off today, a good long look in the mirror, and decide, you know, hey, what are we going to be the last 6 weeks? Because Alonso still has an opportunity to make something of his season. Nimmo still has time to correct himself. JD Martinez has time to show that he's not done, that Father Time hasn't come a-knocking. Because if those guys don't hit, at some point, Lindor's going to go back in a slump. You know, he can't do it all. Then their Mets are in a lot of trouble. You cannot rely on McNeil, Vientos, Alvarez/Torrens, Winker, Bader, and some combination with Taylor to get you through offensively with the kind of starting pitching you have and with the cushion and some of the challenges you have coming out of that bullpen. Sorry. And you can't expect the A-team, even with Nunez back, with Maton, Nunez, Buto can't pitch every day, Diaz. You know, would you have days where you're a tie game or a run behind and it's going to be Ottavino or Stanek or one of those guys? Those guys have shown that they're dicey. You need to be able to score some runs. And right now, the offense quietly, maybe not so quietly after the Seattle series, has been really bad for a while. And the core players like JD and Pete, and we get on Pete a lot, have been bad. And the only one that really, I think, has come out and talked about it and said, hey, I stink and I got to be better, is Nimmo. Give him tons of credit. Pete, still, you know, hey, I'm going to hit 40 home runs. Well, we'll see, Pete. Got Boris going out through Heyman saying, well, we got plenty of guys that are going to be looking to sign Pete. All right, great, Boris. We know you're using the media. You do it all the time. JD, that's, you know, the variable. It could be a slump. It could be age. It could be the back. We don't know. That's why, you know, when you look at this team, the offense is very fragile. It's built on guys like Alonso, who are feeling the crunch of a contract year. JD, who's an older offensive player. You know, Lindor and Nimmo are in their prime, so you expect some consistency there. And then you got a couple of kids that have been really good. Actually, Vientos has been really good. Alvarez, not so much. I mean, Alvarez has probably, as much as he's shown a lot on the leadership side and the receiving side, the part of the game that we never thought we'd be applauding him for, he's been very disappointing as a big leaguer, as an offensive player. He's been streaky. This year, he's shown no power. I don't know if it's the thumb injury or the shoulder injury. I think at some point that'll probably come out. You know, McNeil, who was a core offensive player, and I kind of put him on the component side now, but he's starting to worm his way back in with a new version of himself. I call it the Daniel Murphy version of McNeil with power. You know, maybe we can talk about him being part of that core again. Let's see. So, you know, this homestand will go a long way. You need to start to see these guys, the core guys, hit. And if they don't, I'm sorry. I don't think they could even make the third wild card. And 85 wins is not a large bar. And to tell you the truth, not making the playoffs, unless they go out, they win 85, 86, 87, 88 games, somewhere in that range, and they don't finish with one of the top three records because the teams in front of them just got super hot, I could at least live with that. But and we'll talk more about this. This will be a theme. With the kind of payroll they have, even with the lousy May, even with some of the challenges they've had, with some of the deficits on the roster at various times, with the Diaz situation, because Diaz threw a huge monkey wrench into their season, it's just, it's going to be a major disappointment. And I think they have to really look themselves in the mirror and say, how is it that now, under Cohen, 21, 22, 23-24, they missed the playoffs 3 or 4 years, especially because they have such a financial advantage. And I know some of that has to go into the situation, the turnover, the the position that Cohen was in, and his desire to win and rebuild at the same time. And they finally, I think, found their lane of where they need to go. But it's still a tough spot because it also handcuffs you when you're trying to make improvements, because you're like, I kind of need some of these prospects and I need to make improvements. And, you know, look at how expensive things are getting. So ideally for me, the perfect lineup I've always felt, and I've started to look at it, and I don't know if this will make a hill of beans difference. It would be Nimmo leading off, McNeil second, Lindor third, JD Martinez fourth, Pete Alonso fifth, Viento sixth, a Winker Marte seventh, Alvarez eighth, Beatty ninth. That would be my ideal lineup. I like Nimmo in the leadoff spot. I like him as a run creator. I think he's miscast, even though he's starting to show run production traits. I still don't think that's his game. Maybe he's changing later in his career. He's certainly improved on the power standpoint. Ironically, he's hitting better against left-handed pitching than right-handed pitching, which is crazy to think about where he came from all these years ago. A guy that was frustrated in spring training in 2020 because he couldn't get a hit in backfields against the lefty, and he went to Chili Davis and said, I need to work on this. And then he's worked on it and then some. Marte coming back on the offensive side should help. I mean, truthfully, if JD Martinez is injured or can't play every day, sit him, let that back get some rest, put Marte in as the DH. He's definitely not missed in the field, I could tell you that. I mean, not that Winker's a gold glover, but Marte, you know, right now they need to be tight. Defense is critically important. Look what Taylor's brought to the game with his defense. Look at Bader. Even McNeil, when he's out there, is good defensively. The Mets need to be tight on the offensive side and the defensive side. The starting pitching is what it is. The bullpen is what it is. There's no reinforcements coming. You know, and I think the starting pitching, I'm really curious to see how, I know it's the revenge game with Blackburn pitching against his former team, but Blackburn coming in and how he's pitched the first two games and with his repertoire and with the Mets, you know, they've talked all about their pitching lab and how smart they are with how they can look at analytics. Imagine if Blackburn comes in and is something greater than what we think. So, you know, that's where you're at right now. And truthfully, the real question is, it's not anything more, is can this offense be, you know, the 4.6, 4.7, 4.8 runs per game, 4 to 5 runs per game. They really need to be closer to 5 to get this thing done. They need to be more on the high end of that. Because if they're not, they're in a lot of trouble. I don't care how good their starting pitching is and what comes out of the bullpen, they're not going to be able to navigate this wild card race. Because right now, I don't think the Braves are running away with anything. The Braves have major problems. The Braves are begging to be put out of their misery, and they're just not into this season. But all it takes is 1-7-3 run, which any of these wild card teams can do, including the teams behind them, St. Louis, San Francisco, even the Cubbies or the Reds, and all of a sudden you got yourself a major muck there for the third wild card. And if you don't play well this homestand, San Diego becomes unreachable, maybe Arizona becomes unreachable, and then now instead of having 3 shots at the postseason, you got 1, and you've got a bunch of teams lined up with you. The only difference between them and the Cardinals right now is that they won that game on Monday and the Cardinals didn't. So that's where you're at. That's the State of the Union post-road trip. Let's not get into anything about Seattle. This is not about Seattle. This is not about a 20-1 weekend. This is about an offense that has struggled for a while, that now has to look at itself on this day off. They have a chance to get right, and they have to get right against second division clubs the next 6 days, because after this week, after Sunday, when they have an early game on Sunday, a noon game, they'll be back, you know, for an early dinner. You know, baseball for the Mets and the Mets fans will be over by, you know, probably 3 o'clock. How many times can you say on a Sunday, 3 o'clock on, you get to have the rest of your day to yourself because the Mets game is over? Because then it gets real. Baltimore, West Coast trip, come home for tough competition. Philadelphia, even Toronto, going to Toronto, that's not going to be easy. They got no breaks. You want to say Chicago's a break? Guess what? Team that's on pace to lose an historic amount of games will probably have some players looking to prove themselves. They still have Garrett Crochet. No team at this time of the year can be taken lightly. And the pressure to beat them, especially if they come back from a successful San Diego-Arizona run, the natural inclination for a team is to go, there's no easy games. Forget about that. I never bought into that when people were saying, oh, the schedule's much easier for the Mets than everybody else. There is no easy schedule. It's foolish. It's BS. It's nonsense. So that's where we're at. Nothing else to really go into here. Appreciate everybody tuning in on this Monday, late morning, early afternoon. Keep going to the newsletter. More to come. We'll be checking in throughout the week. If you're not a subscriber, please subscribe. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. Get my thoughts throughout the week. And of course, weekly, the podcast will continue to do what we do here all the time. You can check me out, of course, all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X @TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva @TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G. Mike Silva @TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, as I said, the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I always want to thank our good friends at the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.
For the podcast.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.